See what I mean?
You're right. I'm really not the worst trumpet player in the world. Thanks, Dad.
Just keep practicing, son. You'll get it.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Learn something new every day with your station.
Hello and welcome to the February 2012 edition of The President's Perspective, a monthly half-hour chat with the President and CEO of Texas A&M University Commerce, Dr. Dan Jones. I'm Jared Knight. Today's program covers a couple topics important to the university and to the region. Later on in the program, we're going to talk about some words and insights shared by President Obama at the recent State of the Union address that lay out a course for higher education. But first, February is Black History Month, and that's important to our university for any number of reasons. First, welcome, Dr. Jones.
Thanks, Jared. Good to be here.
Recently, you and I had the honor and privilege of attending both the Hunt County and the Hopkins County African American Leadership Conferences. And while I was just an audience member in both locations and for both of those events, you were the master of ceremonies at the event in Sulphur Springs on the 15th of January.
Right.
Talk about that.
Yeah, our speaker, the one in Sulphur Springs, was Sean Rabb, who was with Fox 4 News.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing him on the TV as just kind of an objective newscaster, you form one image of him.
Right.
Well, it turns out he's a pretty powerful preacher as well.
It's true.
And offers quite a moving presentation about his own life and the way he grew up and how much the church has meant to him and so forth. It was a very stirring event.
And the whole of that honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., but the event itself was such a, like I said, I enjoyed every moment of it. That was the most fun that I had had inside a church in a very long time. And it was entertaining, it was informative, and it was certainly something worth attending. And so if anybody ever gets another chance to go to one of those, I think it's a
It really deal. Is. It was a tremendous opportunity for the whole community to come together.
Right.
And to honor the good works of others throughout the year, we presented awards to some children who had, done some extraordinary things throughout the year. And it was just a stirring event, very, very uplifting.
Right. Well, talk about Black History Month and Texas A&M University Commerce.
Well, we are getting ready to embark upon Black History Month, and we have a series of events planned here at the university. I won't go through them with you here today, but on our website, our listeners can go to that, and we have speakers lined up. We have presentations and various kinds of events. So we'd like to invite every member of the university community and the wider community as well to come out and participate in those and enjoy those events. We also, during this Black History Month, I mean, it's a good time for us to kind of pause and reflect on where we are as an institution in relationship to these kinds of issues. And A&M Commerce has an interesting history in terms of racial integration. This was an all-white campus up and through the mid-60s. President G was the president who made the decision to integrate the campus. Toward the end of his term, actually, he served through 1966, and the campus was integrated beginning in the fall of 1965. So a lot of our alumni who are still around and active and members of this community still remember those days. And I do have what I've learned about it. Of course, I wasn't here at the time. But what I've read about it is that it was it was a tense time in the nation, but because of strong leadership and the fact that everyone came together and worked hard and was determined to make this a success, the university got through that and emerged without the issues that a lot of other university campuses faced at the time. So we do have a legacy of working things out, and I think that's stood us in good stead down to the present day. Our guest for this first segment on the program is Noah Nelson. Noah is a distinguished visiting professor of journalism who comes to us this spring. And Noah was a student back in the late 60s and early 70s, majoring in journalism and radio television. He went on from here to become a network news correspondent for NBC News, had a very distinguished career, which explains the distinguished in his title now.
Sure, sure.
He's been distinguished for a long time.
Right.
And then following his retirement from the network news beat, he went on to have a variety of roles in media, doing voiceovers and consultancies and so forth. So, Noah, welcome.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jones.
It's great to have you here. It's great to have you here on campus, and it's really an honor to have you here on campus. And Noah came and visited us last summer and said that he was interested in returning to his alma mater and giving back. So it's a great thrill to have you here. I hope you're enjoying yourself so far.
I'm having the time of my life. It feels very strange to be back in Commerce after many years away, but it feels great to look around and see all the changes that have happened on campus, just in terms of the buildings and such, and the atmosphere, the scholarship that is present in the school right now. Mm-hmm. It's just a wonderful environment.
It's a good time here at the university. We've got a lot of great people, and Jared and I have talked endlessly on this program before about how we're growing and the various reasons for that.
Right.
But it is an exciting time. You were here. You came in 69. Is that right?
69. Fall 69. Of 69.
Fall of 69. What was the campus like then? I mean, I know the physical, there's a few buildings here that were there then. A lot of them weren't. What about the culture of the campus? What did it feel like to you then?
Well, let me just kind of set up what the country sort of was like in those days. There was much strife in the country over the Vietnam War. The civil rights movement was still in full swing during those times. And as you mentioned in your introduction, this campus did not experience the turmoil that many campuses did in other parts of the country. And I do think it's because of the leadership. And I think not only the leadership from the university, but student leadership mm-hmm. had a great deal to do with why things didn't just explode. But on a more personal level, on a day-to-day level, as a black student, I did experience this transitional period. I mean, there was tension here because there had been many students, white students who had not gone to school with black students before, black students who knew nothing about going to school with white students. And so there was this kind of tension that was always present there. Didn't explode, mm-hmm. but you had to deal with it on a day-to-day basis, and people had to get used to each other.
Right. Well, it was a coming together of cultures which, while they had coexisted kind of under very different ground rules. I know I've talked to, like, the Reverend Harry Turner here in Commerce, who was a student actually when integration occurred in 65 and 66, Opal Pinnell, Ivory Moore.
Right.
And they've described how thoroughly segregated Commerce was then. There really was the other side of the tracks. And, of course, a lot of the African-American citizens worked at the university, but the understanding was that when they got off work, they went back. They went back to their homes and their neighborhoods.
That was exactly true. A lot of the workers here, people who cleaned the dorms, who mm-hmm. worked in the cafeteria and such, did go back to what they used to call in those days. They call it the Norris community now, but it used to be called the Hole, to just be honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually, as a black student, you came here and you were in several environments. You were part of the school as such, and you were in a different category than the people who lived in town. So you were a university student. You weren't a native of the city. You were in a kind of a predominantly white environment, and you were feeling the heat of all of that. And then you were a student, too, trying to learn how to learn,
right?
You know, to become accustomed to being in a university environment. So it was you have to make all of these switches inside of your head just to kind of acclimate yourself to
right.
this.
Just to do routine things.
Exactly.
Right. Right. Yeah, and of course, going away to college is an adjustment for any person of any race, just because you're growing, you know, you're changing, you're finding out who you are. So you take all of those kind of normal developmental phases that you're going through and then overlay them with the other cultural dynamics that you're describing. I could see where it would be a very unsettling kind of a psychological condition.
I had grown up in Dallas, and Dallas is one of those cities that also in the 60s did not explode like Detroit and Los Angeles had done. And there were reasons for that that, you know, could be a show in
right,
themselves.
Yeah, right.
But when I came here, I had already been exposed to an integrated situation just because mm-hmm. of the schools I'd gone to before. I'd gone to Catholic school. So, you know, being in a mixed environment didn't seem like a huge deal to me. I had a roommate, and when they built Whitley Hall, they were trying to populate that dorm, and you got to pick your roommate. And I had made friends with a guy from Palo Alto, California, who in those days they were considered a hippie. He had hair down to his shoulders, and he drove a '66 Dart, that was painted like the American flag, which in those days was just throwing down the gauntlet to everybody who loved the flag. I mean, right. especially the police. And so here you have, you know, a black and white roommate on campus. And as far as we knew, maybe off campus there had been arrangements like that before. But as far as we knew, no other black and white student roomed together.
Right.
And we were best friends during that time, too. And when we'd go out, you know, we'd get looks when we'd drive in his 66 Dart. We were pulled over several times for things that now the police would have to explain about probable cause. But and back in those days, the probable cause was you look funny.
You look funny.
So that we'd get pulled over. I remember once being pulled over and near Sulphur Springs. I don't even remember where we were going, but the officer said, you know, what are you boys? Where are you from? You know, how do you answer a question like that? What are you? We're college students. Well, why is your car painted like the American flag? Don't you know that's sacrilegious?
Yeah.
And we had to answer those questions over and over and over. So, you know, that was an interesting time, just on a personal level and in a wider way, as you kind of look out at the world and what the world was supposed to be like, what you wanted the world to be like, and the world you lived in.
Right.
It was a different time. I know when we try to explain that to our students now, it's very difficult to get them to understand the sense of tension that was just in the air back then.
I relate to the foreign students that I see on campus now, coming from another country and another culture. In a way, for black students to come to college in a predominantly white environment, it's almost like coming to a foreign country, mm-hmm. in a sense. You're not quite accepted. You're supposed to compete on equal basis. You're supposed to learn everything and be up to speed. You speak the language, and yet you're still thought of as something foreign. And I think the difference between then and now for black students on campus, if we're talking about Black History Month, is that I don't think they feel like they're in another country anymore.
Right.
And that's a big switch. That takes away a huge impediment to you just feeling relaxed and being able to take in information right. and give to the university.
Right. Well, and our African-American students have formed a very strong community here on campus. Our African-American population it's about 20%, which is roughly what our service area is. We more or less mirror the demographics of the region. But among our residential population, I don't have the exact figure, but it's much higher. It's probably 35% or 40%. And some of our most active Greek organizations are African American, and they are the Alphas, for example, with their senior day, where they go and bring kids in from Dallas, and they spend a whole day with them, showing them what it's like to go to college. And it's just very gratifying to see how they have made this university something of value to everyone, and it's and they use the diversity as a strength.
That's wonderful to hear that about the Alphas. My generation, baby boomers, in many cases, we were the first generation to actually go to college.
Right.
I was the first person in my family to go to college. Everyone else was working class. And my family was very proud of the fact that I had come to this school and made it through this school. And so to know that that things have changed to the point that the organizations are mentoring, you know, that kind of success,
right.
is a wonderful thing to hear.
Well, Noah, thank you so very much for joining us on the program today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure to be here.
All right. When we come back, we're going to be talking value, access, affordability, and second chances. Stay with us, won't you? This is The President's Perspective, only on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Support for KETR is provided by the Bodark Bed and Breakfast, offering accommodations for single or group travelers. Located on 2.5 wooded acres in Commerce. Amenities include a hot tub. More information is available from the innkeeper, Dr. Jim Stinnett, at 903-886-7705.
Energy efficiency interviews are brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
April.
Yeah?
So you know your charger that's plugged into the wall? It's still using energy, even though it's not attached to a phone.
That's not my charger. I don't even have a cell phone. You know what? I'll just unplug it. I'm busy. I'll call you back.
Millions of kids are using their energy wisely. What's your excuse? Learn more at loseyourexcuse.gov.
Financial support is provided in part by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Pledge your support for your station online at ketr.org/support.
I'm Louisa Lim, NPR's Beijing correspondent. For NPR, I've trekked up Tibetan glaciers and traveled down into the depths of Chinese coal mines. We try to tell the stories that others don't, from every corner of the world. We try to give voice to those who cannot be heard and to bring their world to you, because their world is your world. This is NPR.
Are ye plagued by foreclosure? Well, here at Jim, Lad, and Matey, we can stop your foreclosure now. We're a mortgage rescue company, and for the small fee of everything you hold dear, we will negotiate with your lender on your behalf. Call Jim, Lad, and Matey at 1-800-YAR-YAR. That's 1-800-YAR-YAR-YAR.
If you're facing foreclosure, talk to the right people. Speak with HUD-approved housing counselors free of charge at 888-995-HOPE. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Tess Viglin, the host of Marketplace Money. What do your waistline and your wallet have in common? Actually, they're more similar than you think. To get physically fit, you need discipline, flexibility, and stamina. Well, the same goes for your fiscal fitness. Plus, a little advice from us, of course. Listen to Marketplace Money, and your wallet will thank you.
Weekend afternoons at 2 on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Hey, Brad Davis here. If you would, why not take a minute out of your day and make a donation to great public radio here in Northeast Texas? It's real easy. Just go online to ketr.org/support and give a little back to the station that keeps you in the groove.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
I feel like I'm choking.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
You know how to react to their asthma attacks. Here's how to prevent them. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. Visit www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA and the Ad Council.
Winter months provide opportunities for activities that come but once a year. If your business offers special events or programs that won't be available come spring, consider the benefits of reaching the KETR audience with your message. Program sponsorship is a cost-effective way to market your products, services, or events. Call KETR today at 903-886-5848.
You're listening to The President's Perspective on KETR. This is a monthly half-hour chat with the CEO of TAMUC, Dr. Dan Jones. My name is Jared Knight. When President Obama addressed the nation last week, you may have heard that here on KETR, he included words that were meant to impact higher education.
Yeah, Jared, I watched the State of the Union. I know a lot of our listeners did as well, and it was an interesting speech and touched on many, many different points. But, of course, my ears perked up when he started talking about higher education. And he started talking about how important it is to increase the number of college-going students and the number of college-graduating students. And, again, that's a theme that he has thrown out there before. He very much wants to get our college completion rate up, back up to where it should be. Right. We should be number one in the world. Mm-hmm. And we've sunk to about number 10 in the world. We're about 27% of our nation's citizens have a bachelor's degree or higher, and that places us, you know, well behind countries like Finland and Korea. You know, right. Who saw it coming? Right. You know, right. But that's kind of where we are. But he also said that it is our obligation in higher education to maintain value for our students and not to gouge them on tuition, not to keep. I think his terms were. Jacking up tuition, something like that. Right. I mean, he was pretty blunt right. about it. And he said, you know, I'm putting colleges and universities on notice. You can't keep raising tuition and expect to receive support from the federal government.
Sure.
Well, it's tough language, but I guess what I took away from that is we're very comfortable with that here at A&M Commerce. We don't want to raise tuition. We do it only when it's absolutely necessary.
Right.
And we want to make sure that we deliver value back to our students. So we're taking the pledge. We took the pledge a long time ago to deliver on what we promise. From a larger perspective, though, delivering value is it's in part a matter of dollars and cents for individual students and families, but we also need to think in terms of delivering value to the people of the state of Texas as a whole. I learned recently that there are over 3 million Texans who have some college credit but no degree.
Well, and that's an option on a lot of forms. Some college is an option. I mean, that's such a common thing that that's part of the legal forms.
Exactly. And in terms of making our institution the highest possible value to the public, we need to find ways to get those students back into the fold and get them graduated so they can get on with their lives and help us achieve this broader national goal of raising our college attainment rate. And we have a program here at the university that is very innovative and aims to do just that, help students get back in the game of higher education. And our guest for this segment is Jody Todhunter, the Director of Undergraduate Admissions. Jody, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you here today. And the program that you work on is called our Second Chance Program.
Correct.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that works?
The Second Chance Program was our efforts to help close the Texas Closing the Gap's goals. And one of the things we're trying to do is work with students who may have started at a four-year university and didn't do well. They had some time, hard time adjusting to classes, to their being away from home, their roommate. And so the GPA might not be
Where
it needs to be to be a student with A&M Commerce. So what we're doing is we're looking at their freshman requirements. We'll look at the transfer requirements and see what the grades they bring in. But then we look for
Admissibility
to the university by looking at their high school ACT and SAT test scores. And if they have those requirements, we bring them in, and then we work with them on their transfer courses and see how they apply to their program. And then they have them basically start a second chance to start over and apply his work to the their major.
Right. And I think, Jared, one of the part of the beauty of this program is it's not punitive.
Right.
You know, so often when students stumble early in their college career, the attitude and the approach that universities take is, well, you screwed up, you're going to have to pay for it now. You know, we're going to punish you, we're going to make you take all those courses over again, you're going to have to sit out a semester or whatever it is.
It can feel that way when you're a student, too. I mean, that's the thing, is if you don't make it all the way through the coursework, then you start to feel a little bit defeated, and you know, there's obviously a number of ways to combat that. I know that the advising applications here at the university have become something worth shining a light on. I mean, the fact that somebody's keeping up with students all the way through their college career, but that wasn't always the case, and like I said, some students, they fall through the cracks.
Yeah. We don't want to punish students who may have stumbled. I mean, if they were just lazy and blew it off, that's one thing. But there's a thousand students, there's a thousand reasons why students might fail.
Right.
And this program looks at each individual student as a unique situation.
Right.
What was going on in your life? What can we do to get you back on track? What kind of help and support do you need? And that's what the program is all about, right, Jody?
Correct. And it lets us, you know, once we hear the story of what they're doing and what was the cause of the problem, it helps us identify who they need to talk to here on campus. Would it be their success coach? Would it be somebody in financial aid if they had monetary issues to pay for school? If they have just advising issues, you know, we get them to the right people to get that right answer and then hopefully move forward and not stumble like they were before at another university.
So it's a program that aims to help the state of Texas. We're an agency of the state of Texas.
Right.
But it's a program that helps the state of Texas harvest good, promising candidates for graduation from people who we know are interested or they wouldn't have started in the first place. So we're trying to convert them into college graduates. Now, one of the things that Jody mentioned is that this is kind of a labor-intensive program. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, it is. I mean, we have to look at everything. We have to look at the transfer credit. We have to look at how long have they been out of high school. There's different avenues we can take with the student once we get the whole story. And that's the biggest thing, is get them to come to our office or call us and find out what their story is and figure out what the answer is for them.
So this isn't – you can't write an algorithm to do this.
There's no fill out the online form and get yes or no real quick. Right.
No, this is a human-to-human kind of a project. And I know that universities sometimes get criticized for what looks like, exploding staff sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we hiring so many part-time instructors when we got so many people over in student affairs and there's, you know, twice as many people in student affairs as there was 10 years ago? I'm reading a book now called Academically Adrift. This is a short little editorial comment.
Okay.
And it criticizes universities for the fact that there are so many more people on the payroll in places like Student Access and Success, counselors, financial aid counselors, advisors, tutors, right. All those kinds of things. And the conclusion that the author draws is that we are drifting from our academic mission because of that. Well, in my mind, we are homing in on our academic mission because these are the people who help students be successful.
Isn't that what defines the university experience as opposed to just seeking out and essentially reading a book? I mean,
right.
That's what you could do. You could learn anything that we've talked about before. You can learn anything on Google. But that's not a four-year university. That's not a degree program.
Right. Especially with technology being what it is now, all the content is out there. And again, we talked about this on a previous program. You know, you want a university course, you know, I can get one on my iPhone.
Right.
But that's not an education. An education consists of learning how to learn. And that is always going to require the human touch. Jody, do you have any success stories or early
We've had a couple. We've had a couple students so far. It's still growing, and we're still getting a lot of inquiries. There's a lot of confusion for some of our former students that think that it's a second chance to basically reset their academic career.
Yeah.
But it doesn't apply to them. But we do work with them. Since we have contact with them, we get them in, plugged into the right people to come back to school as our former students. But we have found some other new students that have some reason or some issues that we've worked with them, and they're on track now to be in our CHECK program to be educators. They need to take some more classes to boost the GPA before they can take the education courses. However, they're on track to move towards that direction.
Well, I think as word of this program spreads, its popularity will grow because, I mean, my guess is a lot of the students who can take advantage of this program have given up.
Right.
And so the news for them is good news. Give it another shot. There's a way back in.
If I can say, we've had some students from Oklahoma and Louisiana inquire about the program, looking for more of our online programs. And so we've kind of got them plugged into that information and see if we might see them coming to us in the future. But it's not just Texas. It's actually going out to other places
as
well.
That's great. That's great. And they don't need a visa, at least not from Oklahoma. I'm not sure about Louisiana.
I can't speak for Louisiana. Seems you should ask for one anyway. I don't know.
Right. And a MasterCard, I think.
Well, I think this is going to be an opportunity for so many students. And like I said yesterday, I can name names of folks who I thought were moving right along, you know, the same as I was when I was a student not all that long ago. And you know, one day, one semester, you show up and you go to class and they're not there. And like you said, any number of things can come up that just sort of throw your college career off track. And everybody can't go straight through. And you know, we offer an MBA program here that's the executive MBA program and all the online MBA and online master's programs that are now available, which take care of people who finish their college careers. But this is kind of shifting focus back to those who never actually finished the college career and have an opportunity now to do that, which is relatively unprecedented. I mean, like you said, these folks were already under the impression that they were washed out. They were done.
Right.
You know, college was no longer for them.
Right.
And that's not necessarily true. And I guess now it's sort of our duty to underscore that's not necessarily true. It doesn't matter necessarily how many years it's been. It matters that you're still interested in college and it could still do you some good.
Exactly. And there's a way to do it. And there are friendly and helpful people who will assist you in that process. Well, Jody, Todd Hunter, thanks so much for being our guest on this segment of The President's Perspective, and good luck with the program.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for today. We thank our guests again, Noah Lord Nelson and Jody Todd Hunter. Remember that you can find and listen to this program and others archived online at ketr.org. Next month, we hope to wrap up our discussion on the university's guiding principles, and we'll talk about a neat opportunity that some music students were afforded this year. Dr. Jones, a pleasure as always.
The pleasure is mine, Jared. Thank you.
The President's Perspective airs on the first Wednesday of the month at noon and again at 5 p.m. on listener-supported radio for Northeast Texas, your station, 88.9 KETR. I'm Jared Knight. Thanks for listening.
Your local news is next.
This is your station, 88.9 KETR.
I'm Renee Montaigne, host of Morning Edition from NPR News. 5 days a week, we are your source for the morning's top headlines.
But since the news never sleeps in, even on the weekend, you can listen to Weekend Edition Saturday with me, Scott Simon.
And join me, Leanne Hansen, for Weekend Edition Sunday. No matter what day it is, you can always tune in to NPR News for the best news coverage you can get your ears on.
Beginning at 7, weekend mornings on KETR.